This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica affiliates, and watch us on Free Speech TV, Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. The Green Party's showing in this year's election was strong, but not significant enough to reach the desired 5%. It was more like 1%. Still, the Stein-Baraka ticket garnered more than 1.2 million votes nationwide. That's a big bump from the last Green Party presidential ticket in 2012, which won less than 500,000 votes. Already, some liberal pundits, shocked by the election of Donald Trump, have begun blaming the Green Party for Clinton's loss. The New York Times' Paul Krugman tweeted on election night, "Jill Stein managed to play Ralph Nader. Without her, Florida might have been saved." Except that in Florida, the Green Party presidential candidate Jill Stein won 63,660 votes, while Clinton lost against Trump by almost double that amount. My guest is Ajamu Baraka. He is the 2016 Green Party vice presidential candidate running on the ticket with Jill Stein. Welcome to the program, Ajamu.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to join you once again.
So the last time we had you on, it was just after you had joined the Stein-Baraka ticket, the Stein ticket as the vice, as her running mate. I want to just start by getting your general thoughts on what you think happened this election. I'm assuming that you, like most of the rest of us, were pretty shocked on election night.
Well, I was somewhat surprised. I wasn't really that shocked because I knew that there were things happening out there in the country that the liberal pundits just didn't seem to be picking up on, even as it related to our campaign. We know that we have significant support out there, but we also know that people are impacted by the fear mongering. But the Democrats basically, that's why it's so almost laughable, the comment that Paul made and other liberal pundits have made in the last couple of days, suggesting that it was our campaign or even Gary Johnson that has to be looked at as being responsible for their loss. They lost this campaign when they decided that they were going to be more committed to the liberal establishment, the power of the Clinton machine, than to listen to the voices of democracy within their own party. When they decided to undermine the Sanders campaign, to rig the process in favor of the Clinton machine, that was really the beginning of the end for them. And when they had to field this flawed candidate who ran a campaign that was primarily geared toward a fear of Trump, as opposed to offering a positive vision for how she wanted to take this country forward, it was really almost finished at that point.
What about the fact that, and we're going to talk about this in our next interview, but what about the fact that nearly 60% of all white voters, and this covers all different, sub-demographic categories among white voters, voted for Donald Trump? A majority of white voters in this country picked Donald Trump, whether they had college education or not, whether they were women or men. Of course, more men than women voted for Trump, etc. But still, a lot of whites voted for Trump.
Well, Sonali, in the last couple of elections, the Democrats have not been able to garner significant numbers of white votes. And as a matter of fact, they have, if I'm not mistaken, they have lost the majority of the white votes. It's been the coalitions they have been able to pull together non-white voters, depending also on significant numbers of white women voters, that's been the formula for success. But what happened this time was that coalition wasn't enough because you didn't have much of a turnout because so many people were in fact turned off to both candidates, but within the Democratic Party, turned off to Hillary Clinton. Many people told us on the campaign trail that until they discovered the Green Party, they in fact were not going to vote. And I suspect that many people out there who did not know about the Green Party, because of course we were whited out, they chose not to participate. Something like almost 47% of the registered voters did not in fact cast a vote. So this is a reflection of the lack of enthusiasm, a reflection of the disgust that many people had related to the Democratic Party and their weak and uninspiring platform.
Right. I mean, instead of asking why Green Party candidates ran and why Green voters voted for them, how about asking why not enough Democrats showed up to pick the Democratic candidate? Because if you look at the numbers, she inspired fewer voters of color, fewer African Americans, fewer Latinos than Obama did in his previous election. So it's really interesting. And it certainly goes, I mean, we knew going into this election that these were the two historically most unpopular presidential candidates in recent memory, which certainly, but then, of course, Trump's support was also hugely underestimated to the point where he managed to win enough electoral college votes to win while narrowly losing the popular vote. Just really interesting times we live in. Ajamu, what do you make of the immediate reaction among progressives in the last couple of days, the day after the election and the and going on here on out? We are seeing protests springing up, particularly in metropolitan coastal cities, New York, Oakland, San Francisco, Los Angeles, where people are, thousands of people are coming out onto the streets saying, "Not my presidents, not my president," expressing resistance. First of all, how important is that? And secondly, can it have any impact? Does it matter?
Well, it always matters when you have resistance. And so having this kind of opposition to Donald Trump, I think is important. I think is worth though commenting on the fact that I wonder if we would have the same kind of opposition to the election of Hillary Clinton, which many of us believe if she would have been elected, would have required a similar kind of pressure from the bottom up to make sure that she was not going to, in fact, re-embrace her neoliberal inclinations and impose her neoliberal programs on the rest of this country. You know, many leftists and progressives pretend like they were prepared to, quote unquote, hold her feet to the fire. But many of us did not believe that based on the history of how well they held the feet of Barack Obama to the fire. So, you know, while we know that Donald Trump represents a very dangerous forces, we know that his appeal to racism and xenophobia, anti-LGBTQ rhetoric poses real issues, and immigrants. You know, we understand that basically the population that's going to be the most in danger, the most in danger of real immediate repression are in fact the undocumented. And therefore the rest of us though, you know, we understood that no matter who won this election, we were going to have to fight because the neoliberal economic policies are going to continue. A war being waged against black and brown people in the inner cities were going to continue. The commitment to the permanent war strategy was going to continue. So, you know, I'm glad to see the resistance. It's interesting that we're talking about California and we're talking about the East Coast, because when you look at the map, you look at the map of support for Trump, and you look at the blue-red stuff. The blue is on the both coasts. In the middle, in the heartland, is all red. So
Yeah.
the challenge becomes, how do you begin to address the articulation of the concerns of those folks in the middle? Are we all saying that they all are guided by just racism and xenophobia? A lot are. But I think that undermines a deeper analysis. It says that some folks were concerned about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. They're concerned about what they see as the continued agenda of an elite that has no understanding of the kind of suffering that people in the heartland are still experiencing.
Right. I mean,
And that
I think it's
the
a
Democrats were unable to speak to those kind of needs.
yeah, and I think it's simplistic for us to either dismiss all Trump voters as being racist and xenophobic as well as dismissing them simply as being motivated by economic inequality. Those things do often go hand in hand. When people feel weak, vulnerable, when they feel like they've lost everything, they cling to the one thing that they might have, which in this case might be their skin privilege. And then that sort of folds into racist behavior. They see somebody like Trump, a reality TV star who's echoing the kinds of things that makes them feel, they want to believe that immigrants are the scapegoats, so they do. And so it seems as though that sort of poverty can sadly foster more xenophobia when you have a demagogic figure like Trump kind of willing to focus it, channel it for his own benefit. So then the question becomes, Ajamu, the disarray that people expected from the Republican Party would be in, and it still is in some disarray, but they've got so much power now. Now we're seeing the Democratic Party in disarray. Will they get the right messages from this stinging defeat that they didn't expect? Will they actually have some self-reflection about the fact that they ran the wrong candidate, they have the wrong message, or will they dig their heels in?
I don't think they're going to learn from experience based on comments that we've been seeing over the last 2 days. I think what we should see is that those forces in the Democratic Party that claimed that they were going to wage an internal struggle, now is the time to, in fact, do that. This Our Revolution by the Sanders forces. Now is the time for them to basically dismantle the neoliberal element that's been running the party for the last few decades. So we're going to see how serious they are about real internal reform, whether or not they really are able and ready to take on the real struggle of trying to wrestle back from the liberal bourgeoisie the reins of the party. I don't have a lot of confidence, but I'm not going to dismiss it. But just based on the human material we're dealing with within the Democratic Party, among the so-called progressives, I don't know if they are really willing to undermine their own privileges and really take on the fight that needs to be waged to really transform that that party.
What about how the Green Party ran its campaign this year? This was a very different year. America was very ripe for some kind of change. Of course, the Democrats didn't see that coming, but the kind of traction that both Sanders and Trump drew on opposite ends of the spectrum also provided fertile ground for Green Party organizing. Can you reflect back on the last several months and how the Green Party did? I mentioned 1.2 million votes nationwide, which is pretty impressive.
Well, I think the number is up to 1.9.
Okay.
So we did make some inroads. We expected even more support. And I'm gonna tell you something, Sonali, and I've said this on the campaign trail. It was quite obvious that there were significant numbers of people in this country prepared for a radical alternative. That was reflected in the Sanders campaign. Their positions were basically positions that had been articulated by the Green Party for quite some time. So in a way, a large component of their platform and agenda was in fact ours. The difference was that basically once the Sanders forces surrendered, capitulated to the Democrats, to the corporate Democrats, we were basically whited out. If we would have had a chance to penetrate the debates, not only will we have been competitive, and I meant, being delusional, I think we've been in a very strong position to do something really historic, you know, because the people were looking for something really new, and that potential was there, you know. So, you know, getting access to the people is really the key in any kind of third party challenge. And when you have the corporate press that will provide barriers, and even the elements of the liberal and progressive press are providing barriers, it becomes very difficult to get your message out to large numbers of people. We just are very creative things, you know, but, it's very difficult to get your message out to the masses of people you need to get it out to when you're up institutional barriers.
So, Ajamu, in terms of what the Green Party can do now, let's talk about the future. It's just become a very, very different country. President-elect Trump has already released a list of the very scary things he would do in his first 100 days, touting someone like Rudy Giuliani as attorney general. Essentially, we have a man who's been accused of raping a 13-year-old who's going to enter the White House, and that's just one of the many, many things. So, in this climate, what can the Green Party do to build for the next elections?
Well, unfortunately, Donald Trump would not be the first rapist to enter the White House. In fact, most of the
Yes.
founding fathers, as we all know, were in fact rapists. And Bill Clinton was, of course, accused. I think what we have to do is, as we said in the campaign trail, continue to build an opposition. At this point, the only if you're going to play the electoral game, the only structure out there that can have can play the role of a real opposition is, in fact, the Green Party. So we recognize our potential and, in fact, our responsibility. So we are going to, and we've been already hitting the ground running in terms of strengthening the apparatus, figuring out how we can take those 2 million people who supported us and to move a portion of them into active activity, active participation within our structure. And the emerging social movements. We understand that we are involved in a protracted struggle and that things are going to get even more intense in terms of the potential for real repression. We're going to stand shoulder to shoulder with our Muslim brothers and sisters. We're not going to allow the deportation of the undocumented. We're going to continue to fight against the police forces that are still killing black folks in our communities. And we're going to stand up for Palestinian self-determination. And all of the folks who are under the boot of American imperialism. And in the immediate, we're going to struggle to make sure that this black president does not push through the Trans-Pacific Partnership during this next lame duck session. So we had a lot of work to do and a lot of struggle to engage in.
Ajamu, there is also likely a number of voters in swing states and battleground states who might have supported and come out to vote for the Green Party, but who didn't for fear of peeling votes away from Clinton, who ended up voting for Clinton because they were so worried about Trump. And so I'm wondering if that 2 million number might actually be higher, and that level of support might actually be higher.
So now that we would have had millions of supporters out there. We reached 27 million people through our alternative debates, and the kinds of and we know the social media can be an echo chamber, but and we don't have the money to do the kind of polling that we needed to do to really find out where our real support was. But we had a lot of indication to suggest that we had significant support out there. But that fear factor was what the Democrats used very effectively. One of the silver linings of this Trump administration is that once we survive this, and we will, once young folks understand that we're going to survive Trump and Trumpism, how are they going to use that weapon again in the future? They're not going to be able to do it. I think people are going to be prepared and understand that now is the time to basically draw a line in the sand and build a real alternative and engage the state. Yeah, through this electoral process. And so, they have really, in a way, gave us an opportunity to finally get past, I think, this fear factor, because what else can you, how can you use this again? Even though I know we have some scary folks in the queue over there, people like Ted Cruz. But I think after this experience, people are going to be prepared to really build something new, a real alternative to this Democratic Party fear hustle.
Well, Ajamu, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, and I'm sure we'll have you back on in the future to discuss policy issues like we've done in the past before you were on the ticket. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
My guest is Ajamu Baraka. He is a longtime public intellectual and political activist and the Green Party's 2016 vice presidential candidate. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can sign up for our newsletter at risingupwithsonali.com to get daily emails with links to all our stories.